Welcome back to the Scrappy Startups Podcast, where we explore what it takes to be a successful entrepreneur in today's world. Today, we've got the founder of Joogi, Tom Pratt. Joogi, spelled J-O-O-G-I, is an app you can find on both the Apple and Google stores. Joogi was invented to put 1 million families and homes debt-free over the next 20 years. While it sounds like a crazy idea, it's based on a number of very sound principles and enabled through an electronic platform. Tom was inspired to create Joogi about 15 years ago during the global financial crisis when many people lost their homes. He has been further inspired to act and create Joogi given the struggles that young people face to achieve the American dream. Unlike the Greatest Generation or the Baby Boomers, and even Gen X, Millennial, Gen Z, and the newest generations, they are less hopeful. We want to bring hope to everyone. Now, Tom has come up with a very unique method of commerce to do that. In many ways, this is the electronic version of when neighbors help neighbors to build pole barns or homes, when charity began at home. It embodies the spirit of the pioneers. It embodies the giving spirit of Americans. The idea has three main components to it. First, crowdfunding homes. Second, creating a point system. You can earn points by supporting the crowdfunding, but also through other opportunities such as referrals of new users, checking in every day, playing games, and watching advertising. The third and last component is a blind auction system to reward a home. Now, how does this work in practice? Well, Joogi leans into the American spirit of helping others get better opportunities. Why does Joogi believe this is possible? Americans by far give the vast majority of charity globally. Research has this at $550 billion in 2024. Furthermore, wasted and inefficiency in spending as individuals, such as food waste and impulse buying, plus government waste, is calculated at about $18,000 a year per American, and totals more than $400 billion a year. If we can unlock 2% of the spend, we can easily get 1 million homes in 20 years. The more we unlock, the more impact we can have on future generations. In addition, many Americans are sympathetic to the plight of the younger generation. How many times have you heard a parent say, "I wonder how my kids will afford to own a home?" Joogi isn't asking for a lot to crowdfund each home. A minimum of $10 to a max of $1,000. On average, 50 to 35,000 people can crowdfund a home. If we mobilized Americans to help Americans, and we can help teachers, policemen, military, bartenders, or construction workers, the list goes on, all to earn a home. This is aimed at the average Joe who works hard but struggles to achieve what prior generations took for granted. But it's not just about crowdfunding and handing it to someone. Winners are going to have to earn a home by collecting points. Through diligence and persistence, people can earn points to win a home. It is not about how much money you contribute, but how much you interact as well. The system is set up so it will be difficult for someone with money to game the system. The person who plays long enough and interacts the most can win. If you're diligent over a few years, you certainly are competitive to win a home. And once a home is crowdfunded, it is then put up for a blind auction. The approach to blind auctions was inspired by the Nobel Prize-winning work of Paul Milgram and Robert Wilson on new auction formats, which benefit buyers, sellers, and society. The person who bids the most wins. Save your Joogi points for the homes that appeal the most. Hard work and persistence pays off. If Americans believe in helping Americans, this is the ultimate to working together to really make a difference. It is also fun, and collecting points will be rewarding. I have been so inspired, I joined Joogi to help the mission. This is a big idea where everyone wins through community, having fun, and contributing. Let's jump in with Tom and learn more about what makes him tick and the creation of Joogi.
Hi, everyone. Well, a big warm welcome to Tom Pratt, the founder of Joogi.
spelled J-O-O-G-I. Now, Joogie is absolutely a scrappy startup, and it's a big idea. So, Tom, why don't you tell us a little bit about the big idea and where it came from and how you got started with all this?
Yeah, so the original idea came from the housing bust of 2008. So I was flying for U.S. Airways at the time, and I owned a house in Phoenix. It was probably worth $400,000, $450,000. And when the bust hit, it went to $150,000 overnight. And growing up in eastern Montana, I'd never seen anything like that, where everything was just kind of flat there all the time. And so I'd never seen the ups and downs like that. And so I became kind of obsessed with the same amount of money was out in the world, but why were all these people losing their houses in Phoenix and Florida and Las Vegas? And then I lost my job. I got furloughed for 2 years, almost 2 years. And I knew I'd get called back to work. So I wasn't like super stressed about my job. It was almost like a vacation. And I just had this obsession with why people are losing their homes when the same amount of money was out there. So I came up, it was literally a light bulb moment. I can tell you where I was, and it just hit me. I'm like, oh my gosh, we should make it so there is no debt. And that would be the way to solve this problem, so it would never happen again.
Tell us about the journey from, I got this idea, to finally really being able to launch this idea 17 years later, the ups, the downs, and everything you went through, what kind of things you learned along the way.
If I knew that it was going to take this long and knew all the hardships and the stress I was going to go through, I assume I would have quit. But my wife calls me optimistic, bordering on denial. So I literally always see optimism. And so even though I just went through a really rough day and, you know, got banged up with some people that weren't who they said they were, whatever it was, the next day was always optimistic to me. So I always move forward with that. Otherwise, I'm sure I would have quit if I had any pessimism inside of me. But no, it's finally come to fruition, and it feels like it's really happening. Like, I can really feel it now.
Was it too early in 2009, 10, 11 to this, or were there other elements that you wish you'd done differently?
Yeah, I would say it was too early. I think it could have been done back then, but it would have taken a lot of money and a lot of marketing to get people to, you know, transition their mind into what this is, because now a lot of stuff that kind of correlates to it has been done. So if you blend it together, it makes Joogie. And so people, I think, would be more accepting, or are going to be more accepting of it now. The technology was there in the day. That's not the issue. It was just really about getting people to see this big idea with, you know, things that feel like cryptocurrency, even though this isn't cryptocurrency. Yeah, the technology was never there, or was always there. That was not the issue. But the issue with me not being in technology myself, that's an issue. I had to get people to believe, and I didn't know what was going on in tech. So that's where a lot of the issues that delayed things, where I didn't know what was happening until it was too late. And so, yeah, that's all it is, me not being in the tech world.
You put a lot of your own money in it, but you brought along some investors.
Uh-huh.
How hard has it been to raise capital to get Joogie launched?
Yeah, and that's a whole story in itself too. So the beginning, I had a couple people that were in the tech world that I was convinced we could get it done together. And then, so we raised money on that. And so when I believe it can be done, like if I think I have the, you know, the people that have the technical ability can get it done, I just am being the idea guy and the person who gets people to believe, because you're always getting people to believe. That's like every day. It was easy to raise money when I had the people that I thought could get it done. And then that didn't work out. So then my wife and I put our own money into it until we got to people like you and, you know, and our CTO and things like that. So it's been really easy to raise money this round, because I believe in the team again. And the idea I've always believed in, but I don't raise money unless I think I can get it done. And so I had to have a team in place, because I knew I wasn't the, you know, the CTO or the CEO or.
Let's go into this big idea. What really are you is Joogie? Tell me, take me through, what are you trying to accomplish? How do people actually get a house out of this?
Uh-huh. Yeah, so, you know, my optimism bordering on denial thing, I want everybody to get a house that's paid off, no debt. Like every single family I would like to see get a house. So I know that's not, you know, realistic, even though I still believe it can be done. Like that's just the way the mind works for me. So, and don't quote me on these numbers exactly, Bill, I'd have to look them up again, but I think there's...
Yeah.
Like 264 million adults in the US, and we waste $18,000 per person on average, you know, not linear. Someone might waste 50, someone might waste five, but it comes out to be $18,000 per adult. And if you took that 18,000 and put it in Joogie, you would times that you know, $264 million, there'd be so much money. Divide it by an average cost of like $350,000 for a house. We could pay off a house for every single family, 131 million families, in 9.7 years. When you think about how powerful that is, when it takes one person 30 years to pay off one house, and we could pay off every single family's home for $350,000 of value in 9.7 years, it's amazing. So it's just a really big idea. Now you got to get people to believe in the idea, and you got to get them to see further ahead than just whether they get a house, right? We're crowdfunding houses, and we're giving you a virtual reward like airline miles or hotel points. And once the house is crowdfunded in U.S. dollars, it goes to an auction where now you bid with your Juggies, which is like our Chuck E. Cheese tickets or our airline miles. And that decides who the highest bidder in the auction, that decides who gets a condo that's been prepaid. So now that one's debt-free. But now everyone else behind them is like, are they frustrated or do they believe in this community that everybody could ultimately get a house paid off? And do they want to be in the next house and, you know, be involved in the next one? But, you know, everybody has to crowdfund each home to get it to go to auction. And so we gotta get, that's the big thing, right? Getting people to move forward if they don't get the first house.
And I know you ran an IDEO workshop around this idea. You know, what kind of people are crowdfunding? And then take us through the mentality of crowdfunding. And then we'll go into the points and other things.
All right, let me start with the IDEO study because I think that kind of explains a lot. So I brought in IDEO to do a subject test. And we did 18 people over the course of 5 days. We'd do so many people a day. We'd paid them, you know, $40 and signed the NDA and blah, blah, blah. And so they would run this test. We had a wireframe and a paper script. And we would get them to flip through, read through the script and then go to the wireframe. And what we realized is we used a pickup truck. It was a $14,000 pickup truck at the time to just, you know, for our example. So what we noticed is givers will give no matter what. They're not good at taking. So givers would put $100 to crowdfund this Toyota Tundra or $50. And they didn't want anything for their $50 or $100. But they got Juggies, right? So now they have something. So now they kind of, ultimately, they can become a taker with their Juggies because they're acquiring these by giving. They didn't know they were going to get something until they gave, but they just gave easily. Then we had a taker mentality. You know, people would say, oh, takers are bad, but takers are actually really good for this concept because what we found is takers will give way more than givers once they realize that there's something to get at the end. They're very competitive. So we had one person that was not willing to give anything. And we had to actually, because we were not asking anyone to go through the wireframe or the script. We were letting them go through on their own. And we were hoping that they would go through on their own without us pushing them. One person, we had to ask them to move forward. And once that person saw how it worked, they got the concept of the Juggies and the buying, they were by far our biggest giver, like in the thousands, because they wanted to win the truck. So they went $7,001 thinking that they would get the truck no matter what, which isn't really the case because people don't lose their Juggies till they spend them. So people could have been acquiring Juggies for years and you get Juggies for different reasons. But anyway, yeah, that person became our biggest giver by far. So it just brings takers and givers to the middle. It's really pretty special. Like when that happened, when I saw that, that was another light bulb thing. And it was really, really cool.
And so when they crowdfund, then you're giving them these points, your Juggies. So people collect Juggies. They don't go away. Every time you participate, you go ahead and you continue to build your Juggies up over time. I have a home. It's been fully crowdfunded. Now it goes into this auction, but the auction's not money. It's the points that you've collected. So how do you make sure that everyone has a chance to win their dream home?
Yeah. So we ran a pilot on this, you know, a year and a half ago, and it was, I would call it successful. I did not try to push it because I didn't have, you know, the full team in place and I didn't have the financial backing to, if this thing took off, I was basically scared of it taking off, like scared of success. So I was worried, oh shit, if this takes off, that's a problem, right? So what happened is we ran this pilot and we learned a lot. And so we learned about a lot about the reward system. So we're creating this gamification, and it'll be simple at first, but I think it works. We're putting a couple limits, like on how much you can fund, so you couldn't be, you know, you couldn't overfund, and you're for sure going to get the item. You're getting Joogies for different reasons, whether you're watching an ad, whether you're doing referrals, or you're checking in every day, or things like that for sign up. So Joogies are coming from all different directions. Like people will ultimately lose track of how many points or where their points came from. So I think it's going to really change people's mindset of money too. Like instead of, you know, valuing it based on a dollar, they're not going to know where all those came from over time because they got them in so many random areas that I think that it's going to twist their mind a little bit and let them be a little more free with money and have more of an abundance mindset because they're not comparing it to the dollar.
What's the minimum you can put in?
Yeah, so the minimum is going to be $10, and we're going to put a max of $1,000 on the real estate. This first condo we're going to launch around April 1st is a $525,000 condo. And if 525 people came in for $1,000, you know, one of those 525 people would get this. You know, I'm sure we'll get a lot more people because not everybody's going to do 1,000, but it doesn't necessarily go to the person that put $1,000 in. It might be the person who did the most referrals, you know, just things like that.
So 500 people at 1,000 or 50,000 people each with $10. You get Joogies for, as you said, showing up every day. You get Joogies. There's some gamification and games going on, signing up other people. So it really is that your participation may increase your Joogies more than putting money into it.
Yeah, for sure. And we really want everybody to get a home. So once you get home, then you're kind of out for the next one. But so there's going to be a lot of variables. As soon as one home's funded, it flips to auction and another home is going to show up behind that one, right? So some people are, we want people to fund this knowing that they don't even want that house, that they want the teacher or the policeman or whatever to get the house, the coffee shop, you know, barista. They want to get this house to market because they want to get their Joogies by helping fund it. And then they want to see what the next house is because it may fit them better, right? You don't want to just try to buy every house because if you're only going to get one, you really kind of want to play until you get the one you want. And it's going to be paid off. You know, that's the whole thing. Closing costs are included in that too. So we're really trying to do something that hasn't been done and just change the mindset. Like I've seen some mortgage companies marketing the American dream. Well, I mean, the American dream to me is a 30-year loan. I mean, I think that just weighs everybody down. I don't know if that's really the American dream anymore, but the American dream is always going to be a house. If there's one thing we need, it's a place to live.
Yeah, so this is a totally different commerce model, an auction model where you're not using dollars to get it. You're using your Joogies. It may take you a longer period of time. I guess it's somewhat like saving up a down payment on a house. If you participate, you're saving up Joogies, which is your path to home ownership.
Let me give you an example. When I did the IDEO study, this was a different guy. He came in and he got it right away. And he goes, I love this. I mean, I could almost quote this guy, but he said, I love this. He goes, I just took a Dave Ramsey course. He goes, Dave Ramsey would love this. He goes, I'm just going to play this until I get the exact vehicle I want. So most people buy what they can afford. Now you can change your mind and you know, stay in this longer and get what you want eventually, right? If you know that ultimately you think you can do it, right? It's a mindset. So that was also a light bulb moment for me when that guy said that. That was a neat one too for me.
What do you think is a realistic goal over time on this?
Yeah. Well, you know, we have set a goal of a million homes in 20 years. So, I mean, we hope to be doing, you know, several homes a day and then ultimately like 350 homes a day, you know. So here's the thing. We have internal conversations, you know, with the team, right? And so the goal was set, and you know me, Bill, because we work together. So you're involved, but it's like I'm always going to be the overly optimistic one. So the goal is one in 10 person gets a home. But to me, if one in 10 people get a home, and it's next thing you know, it's one in eight, then it's one in five, and then it's one in one because, you know, if you see that you're going to get, you have a possibility of getting home and out of one in 10 people, then it's going to keep going from there. So I think it'll get slower and lower and lower. But our goal is a million homes in 20 years. And I think we could do better than that. If all goes well, I think we can do better than that.
So 1% of the population who own homes would in fact have those homes debt-free. This is not the richest person's going to win. This is the person who's dedicated to being engaged. It is an entirely different kind of model. I mean, is it just Is there any basis for this new kind of commerce that you're really talking about?
Yeah, so I think the basis would be to do the opposite of everybody else is doing. So everybody's trying to figure out a new way to get people into debt. You've got like Affirm or Klarna. I mean, pretty soon we're going to finance an iPhone for 30 years. So we're doing something completely different than that. We're focused on getting everybody a house in 30 years. And so it's just a whole different way of thinking, which will be hard for people to understand because everybody now just thinks about, well, I go take out a loan and get a home and then it's my home. And so there'll be the people that catch on quick, they'll do really well. And then the people, they'll have to, you know, it'll have to create its own movement, right?
So what has kept you going on the idea? I mean, you started a long time ago, and let's just get into your thought process on this. And what made you an entrepreneur?
Yeah, you know, I was not real academic, so I was never going to be someone that, you know, got a degree and went to work for someone and, you know, built up a retirement and retired. My mind is always really busy. I just could never relax in school. When I was 19 years old, I was maybe even 18. I was in a dorm room and a friend of mine was showing his student pilot certificate to a girl. And I'd never even ridden in a small plane before, but he was like, I remember we were at a party. He was in my dorm room and he was showing this student pilot certificate to a girl. And I thought, huh, maybe I'll learn to fly. And just, that was my light bulb moment for flying. But anyway, so I went home that summer and learned to fly. And then the next summer I went back, I got my license. The next summer I went back from college and I wasn't doing much in college. I would never have gotten through college, and not because I was getting bad grades. I just had no interest in it. So anyway, I went home and the next summer I was working for my flight instructor and he ended up offering the business to me to buy him out. It's a long, you know, a little bit of a long story, but I ended up buying that place really cheap. I bought the flying service in my hometown and I was an Exxon dealer and my dad loaned me the money for two airplanes I bought. So I was still going to college. I was flying back and forth twice a week. And then I was going to my town in Eastern Montana and I was running this flying service. I was brand new. I didn't know anything about business, but my dad loaned me the money. I remember it was 8% interest on these airplanes, which, you know, seems like a lot now, but I didn't think much of it. I was just so excited to get going. And I bought both these planes in Bozeman. And I was in that for the business. I was going back and forth. Well, then I just decided to drop out of college and run that business. And I just, you had to be, this kind of leads into your scrappy startup thing. Like in a small town, you had to be scrappy. I was, for one, you had to be the airport manager. That was part of the deal. You couldn't just own the flying service and, you know, sell fuel and have charter and things like that and rent airplanes. That was part of the deal to use the fuel tanks. The county made you be an airport manager for really cheap, but then they gave you a good deal on the fuel tanks. And I also had a hangar that I leased for really cheap. That was part of the deal and office in the terminal. So anyway, you got to be scrappy. I had to do everything. I mean, I was bathrooms to, you know, flying to plowing snow, mowing lawn, fueling planes. You just did it all. So I think that's the scrappy part. But I bought and sold airplanes. I enjoyed that. I've always enjoyed buying, selling. I did motorcycles, boats, cars, houses. But back then it was mostly airplanes and motorcycles and cars. And by the time I was 29 years old, I'd bought and sold like 40 airplanes. And so that's a lot coming from Eastern Montana. And I also, I don't know, I bought an airplane from a guy that I really liked. It was the most expensive plane I ever bought. And I was 25 years old and it was $120,000. And I remember the guy that I was buying from was he gave me most of my flight ratings and was a really, I looked up to him, you know, in aviation big time. And I remember he had this really beautiful airplane. It ended up being the nicest plane in my hometown. And, you know, I was the youngest guy with a really nice airplane. He goes, I called him up. I wanted to buy this airplane. He offered it to me for $120,000. And I told my dad, my dad didn't fly. He didn't know anything about airplanes. But I told my dad, oh, I'm going to buy this airplane. I was borrowing the money from First Community Bank. And my dad goes, you're going to go broke. And my dad never really talked. He never really gave advice. He never said anything. He was a real quiet guy. So when he did say something, you know, you listen because it's like, whoa, he has something to say here. So he goes, you're going to go broke. So I got all scared, like in that moment. So I said, Phil, I go, I can't afford to buy that airplane. And I'll never forget this, quote unquote. He goes, Tommy, he goes, you can't afford not to buy it. And that made more sense to me than I couldn't afford not to buy it because of the optimism. So I bought it. And I made more money on that. It was the most money I ever made on an airplane when I sold it. And I wished I wouldn't even sold it. It was so nice.
Great. So you were an entrepreneur back then, but then you became a pilot. And yeah. How did that happen? And how did you then continue to be an entrepreneur while you did that?
By accident. So in getting furloughed, you know, everything's always been kind of resourceful and scrappy for me. But so I was running my flying service, and this airline would come in twice a day, Big Sky Airlines. They get fuel sometimes, sometimes not. And they became friends. So I was asking one of the pilots about his schedule, and I had no interest in becoming an airline pilot, but I was asking him about his schedule because I was curious for someone else. I think someone else had asked, and I said, well, I'll ask for you when they come in, when they fly in. So he goes out to the airplane. He comes in. He shows me his schedule. It's on paper. And so I'm like, okay, that was it. Next thing I know, I get a phone call from the chief pilot down in Billings. And she goes, come down and work for us. And I said, no, no, no. I said, I'm happy with my business. And then a month later, she called me back again. And she goes, just come down for an interview. I'm like, okay, I'm always willing to walk through an open door. So it's like, okay. So I go down there and they offer me a job. So then I walk through the next door. Now I'm working for them. So now I'm running my flying service and I'm flying for this small airline, 19-passenger turboprop. And so I would literally trade people trips so that I could overnight in my hometown. I would fly up. I'd land at 8 o'clock at night. I'd get out my pilot uniform. I'd fuel the airplane. Then I'd go in and clean the terminal. I'd go in and vacuum, clean the bathrooms in my uniform. Then I'd go to my own house and I'd stay the night. And then I'd be back up at 5 a.m. to fly back out again. And then on my days off, I'd fly home and work at my flying service. Anyway, it was just always about putting a lot of stuff together to make it work. And I think that's where just the way my mind works that came up with this idea to solve a problem that no one else seemed to care to try to solve.
And are you still flying?
Yeah. Yeah. So I took the month off. I gave away all my flying. And that's why I grew a beard. I have to shave on Thursday because I'll go to New York Thursday, Tokyo on Friday. And so, yeah, I really have a lot of respect for airline pilots in general because I'd been out for a while. I had a medical issue and I've been back for about 2.5 years. And even if I don't like an airline pilot, I have a lot of respect for them. There's a lot that goes with that and the training. And I really appreciate the job. You know, American Airlines, I'll give a shout out to them. They really treat me really great.
And how does being a pilot help being an entrepreneur and trying to, you know, get this thing launched?
Yeah. So the biggest thing I think would be is that I go all these different places around the world. You know, it used to be mostly in the United States. And growing up in Eastern Montana, I had not been a lot of places. I didn't have a lot of interest in leaving there. I was really happy there. But I started flying, you know, seeing different places. And then I went to the bigger airline and saw a bunch of more places. And now I'm doing international. And I think you just get a lot of influence. Like you see things in Korea or Japan or Europe that you apply that could work here. Like you go to Japan and you go to Tokyo and there's so many people living in that city and it's clean and it feels safe and the food's good. And it's like, how are they all getting along and working together? And it doesn't feel like there's any poverty, at least not where I'm at, you know, not where I'm seeing. I think there's over 40 million people in that Tokyo area. But so I think you just get a lot of inspiration from that. And then, you know, maybe sitting in a cockpit with somebody, you're stuck in the cockpit and you got to make conversation and, you know, you get talking and then they'll cue your mind because you got to keep the conversation going. And so your mind kind of expands a little bit. And yeah.
So when you look at what's next, give us an indication what the next year is going to look like for Jugi.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know on that. We'll launch this first condo in April. And then I think from there, we'll see where it goes. But I'm looking, you know, I'm of course looking way out ahead, like solving, you know, getting everybody house. But I'm really focused on this one. Like right now, it's basically obsessive. I'm really curious to see who gets the first condo. You know, it could be a neat story. It could be a teacher. It could be, I don't know. But that's the fun part. I think this never gets boring. For one, this could go into infinity. It never ends. I mean, everybody needs a place to live forever. Getting people out of debt is an amazing thing. So I think that's why I can't drop it. And I think that's why I've never been able to drop it. I always felt like this was better, but I'm just really excited for the first one to get funded and to see who gets it. I think that's going to be the interesting story. That's more exciting for me right now than knowing this could be a multi-zillion dollar company. And, you know, my ego's gone with this. Now I've been through so much with this. All I care about is seeing if I can get it done for the user.
It isn't as who puts in the most money. It's about who earns the most points. They're really participating. And in many ways, it's like saving for a down payment. Because if you participate a lot over 5 years or 8 years or 10 years, you stand a pretty good chance of getting a home. And if you look at it, that would be Americans in a totally new model, put a debt on homes and putting, and in the end, it could be everyone over a long period of time.
Bill, in a home. It would solve the economic issue of the entire United States and people's mental well-being would go through the roof. No, and you know what's interesting? The givers have to take once they have Jugis. I mean, they don't have to. They can leave them sit there. But why would you not? It just, it just makes people, it's apolitical. We want everybody to come on this. We don't, yeah. We're not playing any, you know, any side. But when you can get givers to take, that's actually a pretty cool deal too, because they're not good at taking, and then vice versa, yeah. Takers become givers.
And it's not really aimed at the wealthy. The wealthy will buy their own homes.
Kind of middle class and down.
Yeah. And for the wealthy, however, if you really talk about change and helping people in a very meaningful way, not just talking about it, but not at a lot of money. For the wealthy, it's yet another way they can actually help to raise the boats mm-hmm. of people in the country. So it should be attractive to everyone to engage. It's a network effect. The more people who engage, the more people you can help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And it's going to be a moving target. Right now, you know, let's say the idea was, you know, lower middle class to lower. Now it's gone to higher middle class because the cost of housing is so much more. And if you take every $500,000 loan for 30 years, that's $700,000 in interest. Pull that out and put it towards another home. I mean, you're paying off 1.5 homes for other people by saving that interest. So it's got this effect that we don't even know how powerful it'll be. If it goes, it's world changing.
So how do you get people to put homes on it, you know, developers? I mean, do they go, oh, this is a crazy idea? Or do they like the idea? What are those conversations like?
Yeah, necessity is the mother of all invention. Developers, perfect timing to launch Jugi. Developers are struggling right now. They're having a hard time selling their new inventory. And so I just had my realtor go out and ask. And like a day later, she came back with a brand new condo and they didn't even know who we were and didn't ask any questions because they're willing to try anything right now because they need to sell. So it also, not only are we helping buyers, but we're helping developers, which is, you know, that now you make them, you know, also mutually intertwined, like, you know, to appreciate each other, right? So this is really good timing for this. But I did finally, after 2 months of never meeting this developer and talking to him, I talked to him Friday on the phone, and then we'll talk to him today with his partners. He seemed to really grasp it, and he was buzzing, and you know, he's put 44 units that he wants to build on hold because of the environment right now. But if he sees this moving, they're ready to pull the trigger on it right away, just basically because of what I told him, you know, of this mindset.
Well, it's a big idea. There's no question about that. It's a totally different way of thinking, which I think will boggle the mind for a while. It's a new model of commerce, which, if it works, can be quite powerful. You know, I appreciate the time, but I have a few final questions for you. Favorite ski resort?
Well, I'd have to say Bridger because, you know, that's where I go because I'm social. And if I go to Big Sky, it's too far away and I'm a late starter. And by the time I got there, you know, I'd have to own a place there to want to go up there. But Bridger is a sense of community, and that's kind of like Jugi, right? Like I like to see people I know, and our son sees his friends there. So I'm all about Bridger.
And the final question, favorite restaurants here in Bozeman?
Yeah.
You can have more than one because I know.
Yeah.
Know you.
I don't want to upset anybody, but I mean, everybody knows I'm a Blackbird guy. And then Shan, I like Shan. Blackbird's my go-to place for the most part. I can walk there, which I like. So yeah, I would have to say Blackbird.
That's great.
Yeah.
And well, thanks for sharing.
Yeah. Well, and let me ask you one quick question, Bill. Dog or cat?
Dog. Dog.
Me too. I like cats.
Well, Tom, it's been great. It's great learning about you. You're a fantastic human being.
Oh, thanks, Bill.
Appreciate the time and look forward to hearing more about Jugi in the future.
Okay. All right, Bill. Appreciate our relationship and thanks. That was fun.
Well, I hope you were inspired by Tom. And you can see he's a unique character with a real vision and a deep entrepreneurial spirit. His journey to get here is quite fascinating. But more importantly, hopefully you sense his real desire and belief to make a difference. As I mentioned, I was so inspired by Tom, I joined the mission. I hope you were as inspired as well. Now, here are a few key lessons that I took away from the discussion with Tom. First, being an entrepreneur means deeply believing in what you're doing, coupled with having a drive to succeed. Also, it helps have persistence, a lot of persistence, and resilience. Second, timing is important for all great ideas. Tom had the idea for Jugi 15 years ago. He began to dig in to build it in 2021. He took his time, he tested the idea, and once he got it right, he launched it. Third is the importance of motivation, both self-motivation and having people you can trust who can support you. He has kept himself motivated in spite of many roadblocks. I know I was a skeptic at first, but after looking at the research and the work done by Tom, I bought in. In the beginning, I wasn't a motivator, yet he persisted. I became a motivator. Fourth, the technology has to exist to make it work. Technology has been advanced to be able to build a Jugi platform. Knowing when the timing is right is hard for every entrepreneur. Every good idea maybe is not implementable at the time of conception. I want you to think of flying cars. Great idea. We all want one, but it's not ready to be done today. Now, lastly, Tom is the kind of entrepreneur that thinks differently. Solving the affordable housing crisis, doing good for others, and making money don't often go together. By really thinking out of the box, Tom may have come up with a solution. Not all great business ideas have been discovered. There are always more opportunities to build the next great startup. Tom was going to see the response to Jugi in the next few months as he launches with his first home on the Jugi app. There is a lot to be learned, as well as a lot of opportunity to partner with other companies, causes, and the government. The journey is also part of the reward for Tom. I hope you were inspired to act on your idea and create your own scrappy startup. I'm looking forward to our next episode of Scrappy Startups.